We're back and we're here and we're starting and stuff. Welcome to this week's edition of the Ride Along Radio Show. My name is George Holt. I've been a policeman for a real long time. Well, I was 25 years. I'm retired now. And we do this little show every week we call Ride Along Radio Show, where we give people our perspective as police officers on some of the topics you may see in the news or some of the stuff you see on social media. Just to kind of, as my usual co-host Gil Contreras calls it, we're the cop whisperers, where we can kind of translate and explain it to people so you can see it from our perspective and maybe give you some unique perspective. But hey, I'm rolling solo tonight in an L car, and I got my ride along over here to my right, and I've got the fabulous Sister Heron from Gang Talk Radio, which airs right here on the Morris Media Network, and I've actually been a guest on her show before, and she's returning the favor tonight. She's going to be my ride along as we go through our stories and our topics, and we're going to have a guest on later on, et cetera, et cetera. So, how are you doing, man?
Well, as crazy as I need to be. Okay, so that's usually my usual answer, as crazy as I need to be. Well, what do you need right now?
As long as you can measure it out, then you can use it as you need to use it, that's a good thing. You know, usually we do our social media feedback, and we didn't have a show last week. I was... my office had to be evacuated because we had a wildfire.
Oh, okay.
Yeah, and it actually literally came down to across the street where helicopters were dropping water literally across the street from my office. And the air quality was so bad there, like even if the flames don't come right up to the door, you guys still got to go.
Yeah.
So we banged out, and that put my whole thing off to the point where I couldn't even get it down here in time to do the show. So we didn't have a show last week.
We missed you, but we're glad you're okay.
Yeah, you know what? Hey, as I was driving away, I looked in the rearview mirror, and I was like, hey, as long as everybody's getting away, mm-hmm. and the fire's going to do what it's going to do. That's what insurance is for, right? So, you know, we got to have our priorities straight. I'm looking at people down in Miami right now talking about they're going to try to ride this hurricane out. And I don't understand that. You know, if you can get out of there, get out of there. If they're showing what a Category 4 hurricane can do, a Category 4 hurricane will blow out all the windows in your house and push the front door in on you.
Well, you know, Florida's kind of accustomed to that. That's why they board up their windows.
Sure, you know, they should.
And really, truthfully, we have a lot of painful personal memories from Katrina.
Right.
Where we believe lessons should have been
learned. You like to think so.
That. Yeah, you think so, but...
Well, then we just had Houston last week, so we're hoping that the death toll there... I have a friend down there. I talked to him yesterday. He's part of the rescue efforts down there. And he was saying that they're surprised, pleasantly surprised, that the death toll is as relatively low as it is. Of course, one is too many.
Right.
But as low as it is compared to Katrina.
Right.
And some of the – we've had hurricanes before that killed hundreds of people.
Yeah.
Down in Florida,
yes.
You know.
Yes.
So I look at those efforts there and the lessons. And, of course, my friend in Houston tells me that they're afraid with all the people who've been reported missing, mm-hmm. that when the water recedes, they may find some of those people.
They're going to find them.
And so that's pretty rough stuff. Mm-hmm. But, you know, down in Miami, you know, I didn't even go to Miami. I've been all over Florida except Miami until last year. Mm-hmm. And I've been to Miami several times since then. I really like Miami. And I'm really hoping that Miami and the beauty of Miami can pull through, like New Orleans recovered. You know, I got a chance to go to New Orleans 1 year to the month before Katrina. Mm. I went in September 2004. Katrina hit the next year. Mm-hmm. And then I've been back a couple of times since then, and it's bounced back pretty good.
It's coming.
So I'm hoping Miami doesn't have to suffer like that. And if they do, I'm sure they'll bounce back. But I just, you know, we want to – that loss of life thing is, you know, that's what I don't understand. We're talking about – sheltering in place when you can get out of there.
Right.
You know?
Yeah.
I just don't understand that.
My understanding is that the governor told the folks in the Keys that if they didn't evacuate, they were on their own.
Right. And when you get told that,
yeah,
what are you going to say? Yeah. Producer, can we put up that Polk County Sheriff video since we segued to Florida early? So the Sheriff of Polk County, Florida, sent out a tweet telling people that if you're looking for shelter during this storm and you got warrants, I got a place for you.
Oh, no.
You can come on down to the Polk County Jail. And, you know, And he didn't understand why people got mad.
It's certainly not the time for jokes.
And well, I don't think he was joking. That's the cold part.
No, he was not joking. Oh, no. But there is a joke in that.
Oh, yeah, okay? Sure.
If you got a warrant, you need shelter, we got a place for you.
Yeah. So. Let's listen to this man.
Tonight, shelter showdown. It all started with a tweet from Polk County Sheriff Grady Judd, a message for lawbreakers seeking shelter from the storm. Our Melanie Michael joins us now from Polk County. Mel, this really exploded.
Hey there. Yeah, this was the tweet heard around the internet, one that started a firestorm before the storm. It's the battle of all battles, Grady Judd versus Twitter, a war of words that began with a warning about weather. Here's the tweet that started the heat. If you go to a shelter for Irma and you have a warrant, we'll gladly escort you to the safe and secure shelter called the Polk County Jail.
Never before did I think that we'd be beat up for giving people a warning and keeping people safe, but hey, that's okay.
The sheriff admits he was shocked at the response. A lot of folks outraged with a message of their own for Grady Judd, telling him, the reason people go to a shelter is to seek shelter, describing this hurricane as life and death. Sheriff Judd had a comeback for his critics.
If you're a sexual predator and a sexual offender, we're not going to let you sleep next to any 5 or 6 or 7 year old babies.
I agree with him, and he's found himself in the hot seat many times.
Jessica Westover was shopping for storm supplies with her 13-year-old son and tells us she sides with the sheriff.
Somebody could possibly injure my child and I was in a shelter. I don't want them around my kid.
There were also folks who understood the anger.
I can see both sides. I can definitely see where people would be mad.
Well, I can understand why he's making that decision, but I also can understand why the people are voicing their opinion also.
You know, in the end, the sheriff reiterates, if you have an outstanding warrant, especially for something like traffic tickets, take care of it now. This was meant to be a warning before the storm, or else your forecast could be quite gloomy. I'm Melanie Michael in Polk County tonight, News Channel 8.
We'd like to know what you think.
Okay, so
I take back what I originally said. No. There's something, so I understand the predator. Okay,
sure.
I get that part. But you didn't say predator.
Right, he just said if you have a warrant, take care of it first.
Yeah,
and, well, here's
even
my,
a traffic warrant.
Right, that's where I have the problem with it. Okay, so
yeah,
you know, that's an enforcement tool, and this should be used sparingly. And my question is, why are you even running people who are coming here who need help?
Mm-hmm.
Why are you going to actually have, can you spare deputies to sit there and run people for warrants as each one of them shows up from the shelter? And if I have a traffic warrant, is this going to dissuade me from going to seek shelter? And will I get caught out there and get swept up and blown away and drowned or whatever else?
That's my
because I'm afraid to go to that shelter.
Yeah.
Now, having said that, I will say that jails, particularly jails in Florida, we do some training down at an old prison in Florida. They're built tough, and they're built to critical standards the same way police stations and hospitals and fire stations and some rich people's houses are built to withstand earthquakes and all this stuff, because these are critical structures that you got to have in place even in the event of a disaster. Right. So you're probably going to be safer from the hurricane there, but you're still going to end up in jail.
The point is.
But that happened during Katrina. A lot of people died in jail. You know what I mean? So that wasn't a safe place to be necessarily.
No, it wasn't.
I don't know how many of them died from the hurricane itself, but there was more deaths during Katrina in the jails than there normally would have been.
Right, because there was flooding, and they had to actually link them to each other to evacuate.
Right, to make sure people didn't scatter, right.
Right, so it was a process they really had to work through that, unfortunately, Katrina was not prepared. The city,
the county. So why would you want to fill your jails up during a time like this and be responsible for more people when you could just let it be? I'm just saying this is not the time to run people for warrants.
This is what I see it as, an indirect threat. We're in a crisis situation, but if you got a warrant, you can't come in here.
Yeah, right. That's the thing.
Like you said, you're throwing them back out for whatever the hurricane.
The hurricane gonna do whatever.
Yeah.
You know. Okay. Yeah. So as an enforcement tool, and my thing was this, and I knew cops who did this, and I never had any appreciation for this whatsoever. I've seen situations where people have called the police. They're the victim.
Mm-hmm.
My boyfriend bust me in my head or whatever. Okay. And then we get there, and the boyfriend's long gone. And the officer's taking the victim's information, and he runs the victim for warrants.
Oh, runs a victim.
Victim comes back with the warrants, and now she's got to go to jail. And as the handcuffs are being put on her, she said, "I'm the one that called y'all. What is this?"
Yeah.
And, you know, I always thought that it was a, you know, we cuss a little bit on this show, Sister Heron. I don't mean to offend you.
I've heard all the words, I always felt
that was a chicken shit thing to do.
Yeah, it is.
And most cops do feel that's a chicken shit thing to do.
It is.
To run victims. People are calling you for help, and you don't want anybody hesitant to call you for help.
Right.
So to do things like that is it's a misuse of that enforcement tool,
as far as I'm concerned. It is, absolutely. There should be no question about that. If a victim calls you for police assistance and you turn on them as if they're the perpetrator.
Right, they're not going to call you next time.
I'm not going to ever call you.
Right.
I may take the law into my hands and kill my perpetrator. Oh, you know what I mean?
Yeah, the attacker or whatever.
Find a different way to handle it, but not call law enforcement.
Yeah, I mean, I just never got that. So to me, this is along that same thing. Everybody here is a victim, mm-hmm. or a potential victim of this hurricane. They're trying to get away, and we're actually going to be setting up running people for warrants.
Well, that's my question. What do I do? Volunteer now and go in and say, "Well, Sheriff, I have a traffic warrant. You cuff me now, or do I get a cot? Or how are you going to separate that?"
That's why I don't understand what the county wants to even take that responsibility on.
That's crazy.
And if you have to transport that many people, or just be responsible for the care, feeding, and shelter of that many people. Why would you want to do that? I don't understand that.
If he had said,
maybe trying to get him to leave. Trying to get him to leave the county. Period.
If we're not going to receive child predators, if you'd have been specific about
that, sure.
But just anybody with a warrant,
right? Yeah, that isn't. And I think someone would actually even argue that.
Yeah.
Is to say that even that this child predator, sexual predator, sexual deviant, still we. Does not deserve to be caught up and killed in the storm
because they don't want to come in.
I always see somebody even arguing that.
Yeah.
I just don't think it's the time for that. And if you have proper security in there, take some of your deputies instead of having them running people at the door, put them inside the facility to keep law and order, because we didn't see that in the Superdome.
Right.
There was rapes going on in the Superdome and everything during Katrina.
All kinds of things.
Yeah.
Folks dying in there. You know, dying in the Superdome. So it was a lot of chaos. And we should have learned something. You know, this country should have learned some lessons from that.
Allegedly we have. And I will tell you this. This for sure has happened. The state of Texas has mobilized and streamlined some of their processes for issuing certain licenses for people who can come down there and help. Mm-hmm. If you can show that you're licensed in your own state for certain things, you just show them that, and they'll grant you a temporary license. Mm. So this is going to be for security personnel. It's probably going to be for healthcare personnel, et cetera, because they're going to need security. They're going to need nurses. They're going to need all those people. Right. And instead of you sitting there and waiting a six-month process to get your license, they're waiving all that because they know they need people to come down there and lawfully practice their occupations down there. So.
Now, I'm going to go back to Katrina and just say that there should have been some lessons learned from that.
That's one of the lessons that was learned there.
But that's just one.
Yeah, that's
one. Okay, the prepared part is what was missing here.
Right.
The preparation. They told you this is a horrible
hurricane like we've never seen before.
Yes, coming. And you didn't do anything?
Or you didn't do enough.
You didn't do enough. And I don't really want to blame the folks of Houston, because my husband was from New Orleans, and there's a culture in those communities. Well, we're going to ride this out.
Right, because we've seen it before. And
we've seen it before, and we'll survive, but things have changed.
Well, that's what I was going to say. And you say that, and then the people of New Orleans can perhaps be forgiven for that. But the people of Houston and the people of Miami have the example of the people of New Orleans when Katrina happened.
Yes, they do.
12 years ago.
Yes.
Right? Yeah. So, I mean, come on, man. You know, we got to be prepared. When I'm seeing people stranded on their rooftop because they didn't make any effort to leave that area, mm-hmm. I'm wondering, now, you knew it was coming. Mm-hmm. You know, they talk about us and earthquakes out here in California.
And wildfires.
But you know what? They don't tell you days in advance that earthquakes and wildfires are going to happen.
No.
They just kind of happen.
They happen.
Okay.
They do.
And so, that's why you got to stay prepared.
Right. Right.
You got to stay prepared because you don't know. And in a situation like this where you got a day's worth of warning, I don't get being in a position where you have to be rescued when you were told this was coming.
Right. That's a hard part. And the other side of it that I heard from a resident said, can you imagine the difficulties in evacuating a city of that size?
Well, and they said they didn't want everybody on the road at once because, ironically enough, Had you had millions of people on the road at once, you would have had some traffic fatalities.
Right.
So there's adding to the death toll right there. And people wouldn't have been killed had they not been evacuating.
Right.
So, you know, there's a lot of moving parts that go along with that. Mm-hmm. There really are. But
it's no one answer is the right answer.
No, it's not.
It's a multi-layered thing. And as a Florida governor told the folks living in the Keys very clearly, if you don't evacuate, you're on your own.
Well, and there's another thing. I was listening on the way in here tonight. See, people, we are so used to having a solid government infrastructure where you have emergency services, whether it's police, fire, paramedics, whatever, who are going to come. We have a phone. You pick that phone up and you dial those three numbers, 911,
right,
and they're going to send out all the resources they have.
Right.
And it's not, you know, and there's some societies where they don't have that or it's not as well resourced as ours, right? Florida governor tonight, or not the governor, the county commissioner, one of the counties is going to be really hard hit, said, listen, I'm telling you right now, don't depend on 911, because when you call 911, they're probably not going to answer the phone.
That's right. That's right.
Because, you know, they're going to be, number one, those of them who are still there are going to be overwhelmed.
Mm-hmm.
You're not going to have police officers out patrolling in a hurricane. They're going to be hunkered down someplace.
Yes.
You know, and then they're going to come out and after it blows over. They can't come get you in a hurricane.
No.
So, you know what I mean? So we as Americans get kind of spoiled knowing, hey, 911.
Well, you know what? There has to be a level where common sense.
Yeah, but common sense ain't so common, is what they say, right?
I was about to make that joke. A lot of folks have forgotten just the sensibility of just basic common sense.
Right.
And one of them is, if you know a major storm is coming, don't you stockpile water?
Yeah, that's what I'm saying.
Things like that, an emergency kit in case somebody gets cut, flashlights with batteries, you see.
These are things that are not, you don't have to have $1,000 to have any of this stuff. You can go down to
you'll
the store.
Pay $1,000 for that water after the hurricane.
Oh, yeah, sure. You saw what they were doing?
The
$45 for a case of water?
Oh, God, yes. And see, those are the people the police need to come and see.
Right.
Go see
that. That's terrible.
That
I mean, they're supply and demand, but that's just greed.
That's just greed.
And it's terrible.
And in a time
of
crisis.
Right. You're supposed to be helping your fellow man. You're trying to turn a buck.
Yeah, a big buck.
Well, here's the thing. So let's say I went
out
and I spent
the price of water. Okay.
Well, it's more than double.
But 5 times, 10 times the amount, you really are stealing.
That 24 pack of water is about $5 or $6, and they're turning it for 45. He's flipping that thing 9 times.
Yes.
That's terrible. Yes, now I understand. He's like, hey, I was prepared and you weren't, but don't do people like that. You know what I mean? Don't do people like that. Now that's just terrible.
You just showed the caliber of your character.
Sure,
you really did.
Because what you should have been doing is, if you had extra water, you should have been giving it to people.
If you can't give it and you have to sell it because you have to buy more, you paid
before
for
you
it.
Can buy more.
Well, you paid for it, so
yeah,
you know,
that's
get
true.
Your money back. But to gouge,
that's
crisis,
terrible. That's
is,
terrible. Yeah.
Yeah.
Because you clearly have more than you need because you're selling it.
Yeah.
And then to gouge people is terrible. So.
Yeah. That's always the problem. Gas pricing, water gouging,
yep.
You know, things
we saw that happen during the Northridge earthquake here in 94. Was it 94? This thing's a 94 Northridge earthquake, where there were people at these convenience stores who were doing the same thing with water because the water pipes had burst and they had been contaminated.
Yes.
Buildings were red tagged out in the valley.
Yes.
And they were gouging. And I was working an off-duty job where we had to go protect the 7-Eleven store owners because they had gotten death threats because they had been gouging people.
Mm-hmm.
And so they end up having to pay anyway, the greedy bastards, had to pay a security company that hired off-duty cops, which means they were paying through the nose for off-duty cops. And every bit of money they made on that gouge water, they had to spend for their own protection later because people were very upset with them.
You know, that's the kind of thing in a crisis will have people throw a brick through your window.
That's right.
Take that water.
That's right.
Anyway. And so you don't want to
push. Shack down.
Yeah, you don't want to push people when they're desperate and it's an emergency.
That's what people do,
and
desperate things.
How arrogant for you to think, oh, that'll be okay. And when this is over, I'm going to go back to business as usual.
No, you're not.
No, you're not.
That's right. People remember that.
Yes. I'll never forget, you're the store that held out against my whole neighborhood. Mm-hmm. We're going to make sure you don't make another dime.
That's right, because you don't deserve to be. You're not part of the community when you behave like that.
There it is. So merchants need to understand that about their customers.
If you're part of the community, you act like it.
Yeah, yeah.
So, and we did see that in Houston with, I think it was a car, what's his name? mattress, the mattress dude.
Yes, the man.
Yeah, you know I mean, I forget his name, Mattress Matt or something like that.
Yeah.
And he opened up his store to flood victims when, you know, some people weren't opening up the churches to flood victims. You know, we'll leave that there. But, you know, so some people act like they're part of the community.
Man, I put the furniture man all over Facebook. You know, you want to give somebody tax exempt status?
Give it to him.
Give it to him.
Right. Instead of these churches, it's just a shelter for, it's just not a shelter for people, it's a shelter for taxes.
Well, you know, we talk about churches on a regular basis, so it doesn't have to be a crisis like that for them to show us the weakness that it seems to have taken over our houses of worship. And, you know, I don't want to condemn him because we have so many
charlatans
doing the part. Well, I don't even want to call them charlatans. They're just not doing it.
That's a whole other show and a whole other topic.
It is. It is.
Man.
It is. And even in Los Angeles, with the issues that I cover, our churches are not serving that.
Right.
Oftentimes,
you're right.
They're not trying to find these kids and help them and teach them what faith is, teach them the joys of living. They're not doing any of that.
Right.
You see, so.
Well, those kids don't put nothing in that collection plate when it goes around.
See. Kids don't have, you know.
That's what I'm saying. They're not dropping nothing in that. As you know, don't
give
me.
And
I hope I don't. I don't care. I might alienate people, but that collection plate, I refer to it as a begging bucket.
Well,
because I see them pass it around far too often in some of these churches.
Yes, and the truth is, I see both sides of this. See, because the lights have to be paid for.
Sure, they do.
The building has to be paid for. Mm-hmm. So that and
absolutely.
The minister. Okay, so there are basic
Pastor Rolls Royce got to be paid for.
I'm not talking about that.
Jet fuel's expensive now.
No, you don't have to have a Rolls to be a good shepherd. See,
that's
where you're straying off the path. And so we're talking about this particular preacher. He's not the only one like that. You know,
no, he's just a big target. He's, you know.
Too many of them are self-serving.
Yeah.
That's what's happened. They become self-serving.
Absolutely.
And self-service, and only for their congregation. And in this particular pastor's case, did you open the church for your congregation? Did you open it for them? Was there an emergency need that you could have filled in for them? And what compounds this thing is that as much as I hated to watch it, I was curious who was going to show up Sunday.
Yeah, they said that, too. They said that if your church is empty this Sunday, it should be empty next Sunday, too.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, a lot of people were saying that.
Well, it wasn't empty.
Oh, of course not.
And
they
did pass a plate and asked for a $50 donation.
Oh, wow.
Yes, that was a part that just, oh, my God, just chilled
me out. You know, you got to have, you know what? Hey, you got to have a lot of audacity and a lot of nerve to get up there and lie on God every Sunday anyway.
Mm-hmm.
All right, so look, we're going to take a break. And we have a guest who's going to be joining us, and we're going to get her ready to come and join us via Skype all the way from Dublin, Ireland.
Wow.
So we're going to take a break, and we're going to be right back here on the Ride Along Radio Show. All right. And that was Inspiration Information by Shuggy Otis, L.A.'s own Shuggy Otis, son of Johnny Handjive Otis.
Really?
That's right.
Okay, because I remember Johnny Otis.
That's right, hand jive.
Hand jive.
That's right. Shuggy went to Washington High School, actually. Grew up in Watts, went to Washington High School, and he was supposed to be the bridge, they say, between the era of Sly Stone and the era of Prince.
Oh,
that he would be the musical bridge in there. He's still around. He's still doing his thing.
Mm-hmm.
But, yeah, that was the musical. And actually, that track there, like Prince, he played all the instruments and did all the voices on that song. Incredible.
I tell you, we're talented folks.
Yeah, and we especially some people just have that thing.
A natural thing. Yeah. It's in his genes. His daddy in the hand jive.
Right, exactly.
Was that his father or his grandfather?
That was his father.
His father.
Mm-hmm.
He got the hand jive.
The hand jive, yeah.
You can't help it.
Yeah, for real.
I remember the lyrics to that.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah, you know, I got into it and started checking it out, and it's just this catchy little tune. I understand why it was a hit back in the day,
Back in those days, yes.
Back in the day.
Yes, yes.
So, we have a guest who's got a program going, and I'm going to play the video for the program, and then I'm going to introduce our guest and have her talk about the program she's involved in and her mission that she's made it to assist first responders all over the world.
Yeah. shut up!
There are moments in life when we all need help. In the darkness, when we are troubled, it can seem like we're on our own. It can seem like we will never again see the light. But the light of rescue, the light of hope, the light that will save you isn't always white. It is red and blue. Responders run towards an event, not away. Police, fire, and rescue. EMTs and all other first responders put your life first. Irish Angel is proud to support these brave men and women.
All right, and so the Irish Angel herself is on the line right now. Amanda Coleman, all the way from Dublin, Ireland. Amanda, are you there? Hello, Amanda? Okay, maybe we lost her. I know she was standing by on Skype. So
from Ireland?
Yeah, from Dublin, Ireland. It's like eight hours ahead of us, I believe. So that's actually, it's 8:30 at night here. So it's like 2:30 in the morning. I hope she didn't fall asleep.
I wouldn't have heard she did.
So one of the things she does, and you see it says wrapping wings of support around first responders and having that support system for a lot of people. I mean, I was a cop in a big city for 25 years. So we had the infrastructure either through the local agencies where I worked or through the big agencies. Oh, Amanda, are you on?
I'm on. Hi, how are you?
Hello. Hello. We just did your intro and introduced you as the Irish Angel, also known as Amanda Coleman. Thank you for joining us.
You're welcome. It's great to be on the show.
So tell us how you got the name Irish Angel and how you started this project.
Well, it all stemmed from over here in Ireland. We had a lot of protests and what have you going on regarding government stuff and that kind of thing here. And I have family in law enforcement here. But the rules here is you do not speak, whether you're family or whether you're in on Garda Síochána, you cannot speak about what goes on. So it used to bother me. And
what do they call the police? What's the name of the police department there?
An Garda Síochána. It's Irish.
Okay.
They're known as the Gardaí.
The Gardaí, okay.
Yeah. So
So they can't come home and talk about what they saw or what they did or
no.
Interesting.
Yeah,
I mean, most cops choose not to share a lot of that stuff with their families anyway. But still, it's nice to be able to if you need to.
Exactly. You need to be able to talk about things. I'm sure most do, but I'm sure, you know, like it would never, like you guys are very how would you say, you're very open about things online, and like you would not get a guard talking about anything to do with work online. It just wouldn't happen.
Wow.
They could be sacked for it. So yeah, it's not the dumb thing.
That's a different law enforcement culture. So then,
absolutely.
So then they have to have some kind of support system to be able to deal with that, because I can tell you firsthand that if you don't have the ability to vent or to share with that, it will come back on you. I had that happen to me. It's something I had pushed the back of my mind. I thought I had kind of forgotten about it.
Yeah.
And then one night I was just falling asleep, and it was like it happened all over again. It was something involving a fire, a large structure fire where people died. And one of the people, I actually grabbed the fire extinguisher and ran past this person in the alley. He was on all fours, burnt to a crisp. He's still alive.
He didn't make it.
But that night, laying in my bed, it was like I was there. It was so weird. I'd never experienced a flashback before, but I never went and talked to anybody about it. I could even still smell the smell of the burnt hair and the burnt flesh. It was like I was there again.
Yes.
And I know that had I gotten that off my chest at the time, like I should have, it wouldn't have come back to not necessarily haunt me, but I wouldn't have revisited that same thing more than 10 years later. Yeah. And it was more than 10 years later.
It is really important in the job and the stress that the work, the kind of work that you do as law enforcement, as first responders, you need to have that released.
Right, you gotta have a way to decompress.
Yeah.
And so, Amanda, so what is in place there then for those officers?
Not a lot. There is help. There is helplines, but to be honest, not very many of them use it. They kind of talk amongst themselves rather than, you know, vent to other places. Because here in Ireland, if you're known to have any form of PTSD or anything like that, you can be demoted and given a desk job. You know, like they will not check.
And they would do that here too, for sure. Yeah. If someone had some psychological issues, even something that would be classified as PTSD. But
the difference here is that you're allowed to have this group conversation for a reason.
Sure.
For the reason is what she's saying right here. They're not allowed to.
Right.
And that's detrimental to the mental health of those who serve. It really is.
Yeah. It is. It is. And like, I know PTSD is always associated with people in the military, but it does. It goes down to every first responder, from law enforcement to EMS to fire.
To people who work in emergency rooms. An emergency room is a fairly stable environment for the workers. There's not a lot of danger in an emergency room, but they still see a lot of negativity.
Yes.
They still have people die on them in there, see people coming grievously injured. Yes. A lot of trauma, that's what I'm looking for. Mm-hmm. And so PTSD has got a much broader definition than it had 10 years ago.
Yes.
You know, and you can suffer from that. You really can in a capacity that no one would think. So let alone if you're a first responder, and you're there on the scene, and you see people die, or you see, horrible accidents, or the aftermath of things, or sometime you're involved in it.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, it can. It can be a tough thing. It really can be.
And it really is.
So I'm really glad that you saw the need for that. And so, what are some of the things that Irish Angel sets up for that?
Well, basically, where I went with that was my cousin, who is a guard, said to me about what was going on in the States. He said, you think we have it bad? You need to go online. You need to see what's happening in the States. So I did. And amongst my journey, I met a lot of first responders and became very friendly with them. And then with knowing that, I learned a lot about the Constitution and the way things work in the States.
Sure.
And it became a passion of mine then, because I'd seen so many deaths within law enforcement. And I was blown away by it all. So I felt that and then seeing all the PTSD that was going, like I was oblivious to what was going on over there. So having made friends, I found it I took it very personal. So I wanted to create a site basically that people could go to, because there's a lot of hate regarding law enforcement out there, and you find it on social media everywhere. So I wanted to create somewhere that was safe for them to go and network with each other, you know, that if they were having a rough day, that they could talk to each other, or if they were suffering with PTSD, that there was people there that could help them and understand them, and to interact with each other in a positive manner. But also not have to be too PC, like on every other site you have to be, you know, there's a correct way to be,
right,
where you can't be yourself. So at least this gives them the outlet for that. Well, at least that's the objective now, because Irish Angel has just launched last month.
So, let's talk about the website in terms of where people can go to see what you're doing and how they can assist, et cetera.
Yeah, so basically what we're doing is I'm going to have like guest bloggers every month from every department, from fire to military, all across the board.
Uh-huh.
But not just them, also for genuine supporters and for their families. So it'll be them sharing their experiences, what has happened to them in the past, like their concerns and give advice basically. And people can comment on it. It's a completely interactive site.
That's really important, to be able, you know, writing for a lot of people is an outlet, and it's an outlet that I don't take advantage of nearly as much as I used to, but it can be a great outlet. And then to be able to interact with people, and then maybe you're using your experiences to someone else's benefit, and knowing
that
you're helping by doing that, right?
Yeah.
Can I ask a serious question about doing this on social media, since it's discouraged for the responders to make it known.
Oh, sure, that, to talk about certain things.
Yeah,
or to,
that
yeah,
they're
put
having, and I don't want to say adjustments. You know what I'm meaning here, that they need to talk about their experiences. When you put it on social media, invite their families to join in that conversation for that dialogue, does that put that responder in any kind of jeopardy with his employer? You know, see, in America, depending on what you put on Facebook, your employer can come after you. So I'm asking it in that context.
Well, when you sign into the site, you can create your own username and password, so you don't basically have to be yourself,
if
you know what I mean. Okay. So you can it remains anonymous, basically.
Yeah, that level of anonymity is going to encourage people to open up a little bit more, too.
Yes, yes.
Yeah, yeah. And, you know, like the blogs, they're there for people to read and enjoy. They're quite positive. The whole thing about the site is to make it as positive as possible for people, you know, in without it being, you know, like the usual, that what you see online all the time, where it has to be all sunshine and lollipops, you know, when realistically people, so far the blogs that are up there, there's, you know, people have talked about things that have happened to them, the negative things that have happened to them, and how they've turned it into a positive. And that's what it's all about. It's shown that there is light at the end of the tunnel, and you can, you know, you can create something good out of something bad. Basically.
Sure. And that you're maybe not alone in what you're going through.
Yeah, exactly.
You know, and a lot, and you know, we always, you know, a lot of first responders, we like to think we're tough guys. So we want to make fun of the safe space and the snowflakes and all that. But
exactly.
I think everybody, you know, that's the thing. We look down on that with disdain. Right. But I think that you've heard that before. But, you know, I think that everybody's got to have that place where they can talk. And you know, what we used to do is real simple. We called it a code zebra. Some police departments call it choir practice, where after work, somebody would go and get a case of beer, and another guy would go get a bunch of carne asada. And, you know, we would go out to the park, or somebody would have a hibachi in the back of their truck. And we'd set up, you know, and we talk about things,
but you wouldn't talk about the experience you just had. See, this
not necessarily. You know, if we did, it would be in a laughing manner, kind of that gallows humor.
Right.
It wasn't like a serious, solemn, let me get this off my chest thing.
Yeah.
It was, did you see that happen? Oh my God, can you believe that happened? And then I'm going to tell you, and now it can be told because I'm honorably retired, honorably separated from service. I have heard and one time witnessed a situation where it got a little too crazy because there's a little too much alcohol involved. Everybody's got a gun on. And then we got into what we call, well, let's just call it celebratory gunfire.
Oh, no.
Okay? Okay? Because, you know, someone
call
used
the police on you.
Right, and that's the thing, right? So now you're like, okay, we're cops. And we have to leave before the on-duty cops show up.
Who came?
Because somebody got a little. Well, I don't know who came because I was gone.
No,
but
that's so crazy.
But that happened.
That, I know,
I'm just saying,
I'm
it
sure.
happened. You know, and you know. So it's not always the most constructive environment to do that in. But when you've got this online community like you're setting up, Amanda, I think that's kind of the more positive and constructive environment for you for people to share, right?
Yeah. Yeah, of course. Like when people go on there with problems, it's like you said yourself. A lot of the time, humor takes away from the existing, like the pain of what it was.
Sure.
The best way to do it is to channel it through humor or through, you know, just being positive or, like you said, making it in a joking manner. You know,
right.
Because if you don't, it can get on top of you. And you know,
sure.
You'll think about it. You'll overthink things, and then God knows where you'll end up, you know.
Well, exactly. And you know, here's my question too. Is there the suicide problem amongst police in Ireland like we have amongst American police?
There is, but not nowhere near as much. Nowhere near as much.
Yeah,
and it wouldn't be. A lot of the time, it's more personal related than it is anything else, as far as I know. Because we wouldn't have the level of crime that you guys have.
Oh,
you know?
sure. So maybe not. The same. Well, you know what? But back during the Troubles and with Ireland, Northern Ireland, etc.
Yeah,
I can imagine it was pretty violent for certain officers at a certain time, right?
Yeah.
But I mean,
yeah,
that's long sure. since passed, right? I mean, that's 20
yeah,
plus
that's,
years ago.
It's all gone now. It's all by the wayside now. Everybody gets along, and you know, we live with it. It's all good.
Nice. Hopefully, we'll get there one day. Here in this country, it can all be good. You know, but you know, that's fantastic. So now there's another program that you're involved in. That's an American-based program you were telling me about earlier.
Yeah, I volunteer to a company called Emergency Operations Proving Ground. They're based in Texas, and Banning Swetland is he's the founder of it, and he is a Marine, but he's now an LEO.
Okay, and he's now a law enforcement officer. Cool.
Yeah, in Dallas-Fort Worth. And basically, Banning is a cancer survivor. He's a great guy. And when he was going through his own problems, he got this idea in his head. You know, it was around the time of 9/11, and he just got this idea, and he rolled with it, and he kept writing diaries and diaries and diaries. And eventually it turned into EOPG. And basically what it is he wants to unite all first responders and law enforcement in tactical training against terrorism.
Uh-huh.
Particularly the way it is now between ISIS and God knows it, like sure. internal, external, you know, it's all over the place now at the moment. But basically what he wants to do is unite them and build a training city. It'll probably be about 2,033 acres big.
What?
It,
2,033
yeah,
acres? Wow.
Yeah.
No, yeah, that's huge. I mean, yeah, that's incredible.
He'll
be able to do a lot of
stuff.
Amazing.
He's
in the right part of the
amazing.
Country, though. A lot of flat ground out there in Texas. A lot of wide open space.
There is indeed. So it's going to be in hopefully, fingers crossed, it's going to be in Jacksonboro, Texas.
Okay.
And they're basically trying to get the funding to buy the land. The land is quite expensive. But sure. Once that's done, then we're good to go. But it's not only just for to unite everybody in training against terrorism. There's going to be facilities for all forms of PTSD to be helped with. There will be a facility as well for veterans transitioning, to give them
so
life
helpful.
Skills.
Yeah, that's so helpful, because you have to be able to make that transition. Going from law enforcement to the public into the private sector. Excuse me. I've seen people, some veterans make that successful transition from the military into law enforcement, and then make it from the military into the private sector. And I've also seen veterans struggle with both because they're different.
Yeah.
And so you have to learn how to apply those skill sets in a way that's going to make you an asset and not a liability.
Yes.
You know.
Absolutely.
And so that's great. That's going to be great to be able to help them with that transition.
Of course, yeah. And, you know, like they'll help them like with their resumes you call them? We call them CVs.
Oh, right, yeah. No, you know, it's a CV, yeah. We call them CVs here, but a CV is like a 4 or 5 page resume. For us, a resume can be like a single sheet or 2 sheets or whatever. But yeah, the CV is like a big deal, at least over here.
Yeah, so they're going to help them with that and then help them find good jobs for veterans. But the whole objective is as well to make it very affordable for all first responders and law enforcement, because obviously, I mean, come on, you don't get paid that much.
Right.
You know what I mean.
That's going to be
but for the training that's involved.
That's going to be expensive. So listen, we have a caller, and I think the caller may have some questions for you here. Caller, what's your name? What you calling? Where are you calling from?
This is Eddie Goodman.
Eddie Goodman, how are you?
Hi, Eddie.
I'm doing good.
If you're looking for your Uncle Gil, man, he's not here tonight.
Yeah, that's what I'm saying. What is he doing? like what's going on, man?
Yeah, no, Gil is off doing some secret squirrel stuff in an undisclosed location, but hopefully he'll be back in a week or two.
All right. Well, listen, man, I'm tuning in, and I just had to call and clown because I know he's high. A lot of stuff going on in the world, man.
Yeah, there are. And we're actually going to get to some of that stuff, too. And we talked about a little bit about some of it earlier, but there's some stuff we're certainly going to talk about. We're going to talk about that Salt Lake City thing here after the break,
cool.
too.
Okay, cool, man. I'll keep tuning in.
All right.
Okay.
Thanks, Eddie.
Happy.
All right. All right, that's Eddie Goodman, a long time Ride Along Radio listener, who's actually been a guest on the show. He was a guest on one of our first shows. He was he's involved in public safety efforts at some of our local public schools here.
Okay.
So yeah, he's got an interesting take on a bunch of stuff. But him and my regular co-host go back and forth all the time.
Okay.
All the time. It's they have a love-hate relationship. It's very friendly. Very friendly. It's fun to watch on Facebook too. So Amanda, can you give us your website and also and your social media and the website for the EOPV people? EOPG.
EOPG. For the Irish Angel is www.irishangel.info. And EOPG is eopg.org. And if you want to make any donations, you can do so online to EOPG.
And your social media, I know you have Facebook and you have Twitter, you have Instagram, et cetera.
We do indeed. So it's Irish Angel on Facebook, and it's @BlueIrishAngel on Twitter.
Oh, that's right. Yeah, Blue Irish Angel. Yeah. Nice.
It's the same as well on Gmail, or Google Plus.
Okay, very good. So we're going to be continuing to follow you and what you've got going on, and we'll be looking forward to coming out there to the EOPG facility and doing some training out there. You know, that's going to be fantastic. I love Texas anyway. So that's just another excuse to get out to Texas. So
I know
that it's late, or actually very early there. It's got to be, what, almost 5 o'clock in the morning out there or something like that?
What time is it
where you are? Is it 5 in the morning?
5 in the morning, yeah.
Wow.
Okay. All right.
Well, that's dedication and motivation, and I salute you. For being up and handling it, and for all that you're doing for first responders. And you know, it sometimes is a thankless job, and it's very nice to know that there's a support system of people who care.
Yes.
And
absolutely.
You know, and who want to understand and want to provide some assistance, because sometimes, you know, we don't do it for ourselves. It's, you know.
Yeah.
So I appreciate you.
And I encourage as well people who do support law enforcement and first responders and the military, to, if they are active on social media, to be active towards them in a really positive way, because that's actually how I am here today, is because of doing just that. And I never realized the power it had for these people. I had people mailing me, and I was blown away because they were thanking me, and I was going, but nice. I'm just thanking you for what you do, you know, and it really means so much to them.
Oh,
so
sure.
If you can, do it. That's what I say.
Well, you know what? Amen to that, for sure, because it's sorely needed, and it's appreciated. And so, Amanda, I know you're going to go to bed now, but, you know, keep us in mind, and hopefully we'll have you come back on. And when you come out to EOPG, hopefully you can swing by and visit us here live in the studio. Or we can
indeed.
Do a remote from out there. So I appreciate you. Everybody, this is Amanda Coleman, the Irish Angel, all the way from Dublin, Ireland. And thank you, ma'am.
Thanks a million for having me. Take care.
Okay. Good night. Or good morning or something.
Good morning.
Good morning.
And that was fascinating, you know, because for somebody like me, I'm on the other side.
Okay.
On the other side, you guys are always our biggest problem, and we're still trying to work
things out. The biggest problem.
Yeah, part of it. And really, what makes it problematic is our lack of communication.
Sure.
We don't communicate effectively. And on my side, it can be very oppressive. Very oppressive to have that body in uniform come to see about the business in our neighborhood, and sometimes response can be the spark that makes things go backwards. I'm basing all that in our history.
Sure.
It's not just now, it's in our history. So we worked a long time to try to make things better. You know, some successes we've had, there have been some failings, and then there's some backward movement.
Mm-hmm.
But I'm the one that tries to see it from both sides.
Good. Everybody should.
Well, you know, it's not easy to do. You see, when you're in the moment, you're looking, like we were just talking about that officer down there. We're in the moment of a crisis, and he tells you right away, if you come to my facility and you got a warrant, I'm going to lock you up.
Right.
Well, I'm not going to your facility.
Right.
Exactly. I'm not. You see, so, and I'm not bringing my family there, and I'm telling my friends not to go there, too,
sure.
whether they have a warrant or not.
Well, it's not a welcoming, safe place for
people
to go.
There it is. Sure. There it is right there. He's not trying to offer, protect, and serve. He's issued a directive.
Right. That's a an edict he put out there.
Just plain and simple. If you got a warrant, you show up here, we're gonna keep you.
Yeah. Yeah.
You know, so that's not very mutual.
No, it's not agreement. Mutual communications. Not, it's not user friendly.
No.
It's not conducive to the idea that we're here to help you.
Right. And maybe that person with the warrant would be the rescuer of somebody that's sitting on their roof. How do you know
right.
who
How
that
you know?
Is? You're just making a blanket statement.
Right.
Okay. And the shame is that if he has a warrant and you haven't caught him, whose fault is that? Why is he still out free with a warrant?
Well,
okay,
well, so you can't go get everybody.
I know, but you know what I'm saying. The realistic side of it is that communication is the number one thing that puts us against each other.
You know, and he could have been slick about it and not said anything, and just when people showed up, start.
Yeah.
You know, he got a bus over there, and okay, you got warrants, and then people wouldn't even know.
They wouldn't even know.
You know, it'd be like the Roach Motel.
There it is. Well, you know, L.A. for a while, we used to set up one of these sweepstake parties, or you won the lottery.
Yeah, you're going to go to the Pro Bowl, or you're going to say, free trip to Vegas, come on down.
Come on down.
And then you show up, and they had people showing up with their kids and everything,
Yes.
And you showed up down here, and we have some jewelry for you. We got these nice
handcuffs.
Nice bracelets for you.
Yeah.
To turn around, put your hands behind your back, you know.
Yeah, so... That I thought that was very clever.
It was.
I don't like when they brought their families, but I thought, man, you just made it.
Well, and they were getting child
you.
Support people. They were getting people who were like, who had child support warrants and that kind of thing. So a lot of people were cheering that on.
Well, the point is, they went after those that had a warrant.
Right.
Okay. They invited them.
Sure. As opposed to there's a storm.
Right.
And now if you show up down here to try not to drown,
right.
I'm gonna go ahead and put you in the jail. So if you want to drown, you want to go to jail.
Right. Right. So there's just something.
Well. Well, you know,
we're still trying to work it out, and
we'll get there. It's better than it was.
Well, the one thing that I respect about what she's doing, I do believe, certainly in the case of you and that fire, there should have been some kind of debriefing.
Right.
If it was all the men that had to respond to that fire, there should have been some kind of debriefing, whether it had liquor or not, but no guns. Okay.
Well, you know what, though? I think the idea was, and my partner and I actually had to be hospitalized for smoke inhalation after that, too. Treated for smoke inhalation. And I never had seen, you know, we actually are coughing up and sneezing soot out of you.
Yes.
I didn't know that people could actually do that and live through it, but we did.
Yes.
And we were on oxygen and everything. And, you know, they send you someplace if you shoot somebody.
Mm-hmm.
I've been sent to the psychologist after a situation like that to go talking, and it really helped, believe me. But that's because you have caused the injury or you caused the death or whatever it may have come out, but not where you've seen something horrific. I mean, it was bad. I mean, you know, it was worse than what I'm telling you. Let's put it like that.
and to see that he's burned and to know that he's not going to recover and to smell that and see it.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, and not have it dealt with. I understand why you had a nightmare.
Yeah, you forget about it. You think you forget about it.
Yeah,
but
no, you don't. Not a horrible memory like that. No.
Not really, you don't.
No.
So on that note, we're going to take a break.
Okay.
And we're going to play a little bit of music, and we're going to get ourselves queued up for our third and final segment. And we'll see you guys here in a minute. We'll be right back. All right. And that was Do It Again by Steely Dan. And rest in peace, Walter Becker, who passed away earlier this week, sir. Founding member of Steely Dan. And, you know, Steely Dan was just one of those nice laid-back kind of rock bands. You know, they had some very nice songs. And Walter Becker was a big part of one of the founders, you know. So rest in peace. Job well done, man, in terms of contributing to American musical landscape.
Thank you for the music.
That's right. Mm-hmm. That's right. So, we got a lot of stuff, but there's a film coming out. It's called Fallen, and it's a we're going to play the trailer for the film Fallen, and we're going to it actually talks a lot about the what happens as line of duty death. And what happens with the survivors and how that affects the people around it. And I experienced that personally. And then we're going to bring on a guest who actually experienced that with me because a mutual friend of ours, a coworker of ours, passed away. He was killed in line of duty in 2005, April 29, 2005. Mm. And it was just a devastating event for all of us. It was the worst day of my career. 25-year career, and that was the absolute worst day. We're gonna play the trailer for Fallen here in a second, and then we're going to come back in and introduce our guest, who is Marshall McClain of the Los Angeles Airport Police Officer Association. He's been a frequent guest here on the Ride Along Radio Show, and we're going to play that trailer and bring Marshall on afterwards.
Four-year-old and my five-year-old that her daddy was shot and killed.
I could tell by looking at her that it was not going to be good. You just know. And I went back and I told the chief that she wasn't going to make it.
I don't think we'll ever forget. I don't think anybody has. I don't think we ever will, like I said, but I don't think we're ever going to be as close as we were that moment.
A police officer is killed in the line of duty every 53 hours in the United States.
I can't delete his number. It's almost like if I delete his number, I'm admitting that he's not here, you know, that he's gone.
South SAC has 1199 in progress. Officer down, shots have been fired. When we have further, I will update you.
They say time will heal. The only thing I can do now is hope I live long enough.
These guys have hearts behind the badges, and I don't think the community knows that.
I'm a person just like your person, but I have one of the most complicated jobs that there is.
Yes, he was a cop. He was killed in line of duty, but you know, that tends to go away. People have short-term memories. I remember the person. I remember the cop.
You know, that's a powerful trailer. And, you know, one of the things that one of those officers said was that he didn't want to delete the officer's number. Mm-hmm. Because it would be like admitting that he's not here, you know. And when my friend Tommy Scott was killed on April 29th, 2005, one of the things that I kept his number in my phone. And I was involved in a really bad car accident the next year and tore my car up and I lost a bunch of personal property on the freeway. But the thing that I lost that really bothered me was that the phone that had Tommy's number in it was destroyed in an accident. It was out on the freeway and got run over, whatever. Yeah. And, you know, I know exactly what he means. I knew officers who would sometimes still call Tommy's number and just leave him a voicemail message. Mm. You know what I mean? Just as a way of communicating with him. So something that small doesn't, you know, you think that it wouldn't be that way, but I'm sure people do that with their other loved ones anyway.
Yes, it's not small.
It's a big thing.
He was a friend of yours, he's a friend of yours, whether it's in the uniform or not, he was somebody important to you. And, you know, I've done things like that too. You know, people that mean something to me, and actually somebody in uniform, I still have his number, still have his email address, it's Kenny Garner.
Oh, right, Chief right. Kenny Garner. Chief Kenny Garner. Yeah, Dad had a heart attack mowing his lawn or something, didn't he?
At 50 years old.
Yeah,
amazing. I was so upset with Kenny about that because he was in excellent
shape. Yeah, everybody was shocked by that.
Yeah, yes, we were all very shocked. But to be honest about it, Kenny was the first officer that I asked he had communication with.
Oh.
And it was effective communication.
And I'm not surprised to hear that because everything I heard about him was entirely positive. I never met him, but I heard very good things about him.
He was
for members of the community, not just law enforcement.
Yes. No, he was really trying to be a good guy and solve some problems for the agency and the community.
And the community.
He wasn't one-sided about it as we had been.
Well, he was a member of both, though.
Yes, he was. And that's what made him so valuable.
Exactly.
That's what made him so valuable. But I'm giving him credit because he was the first time. I was born in this city. This is my birthplace.
True.
So I was here in 65.
Oh, right.
Yes,
right.
I was.
First riots here, yeah. I was born in 65.
Okay, so. Well, you missed all of that, but I didn't. And, it's been very difficult for our community. And I really thought that when Chief Bratton came out, we had made some progress.
If you look at it where it was to where it is now, and even up to Bratton and et cetera, there, you know, the post-Daryl Gates era, there was some progress.
Yeah,
for sure.
We have our
caller, our guest is on the line. Marshall McLean, are you there?
I am. How are you, sir?
All right. How are you?
I'm good, and happy early birthday.
Yeah, happy early birthday to you, too. We sometimes celebrate our birthdays together.
Oh, okay.
So we're like 10 days apart.
All right. Well, happy birthday to both of you.
So
thank you. You got a partner there that's actually positive.
Yes, I do. I actually have Sister Heron, who is one of the hosts of the show. It's called Gang Talk. It actually comes on right before Right Along Radio Show. It comes on from 6 to 7 on Thursdays, and we come on at 8 o'clock. So there's that hour turnaround. And I've been on her show before, so tonight she's riding along with me.
That's right.
Well, I'd like her to extend that ride along and come on down Sunday night and actually see the film.
Oh, wow. Nice. Nice.
Sunday.
So is this Sunday night coming up? The 10th? It's the 10th.
Sunday night. So it's actually going to be at the Montalban Theater downtown in
downtown.
Hollywood.
Is that right?
Rooftop Theater. Yeah. The Rooftop Theater, doors will open at 6:30. And come on down and get you some free popcorn. As I told George, if you get your loyal listeners, the first, let's make it the first 10 Ride Along Radio listeners that send me an email with their name and information, I'll make sure that they get two tickets. And that's the email will be RSVP, like a respond to Dubuque, RSVP at LAPOA, LAAPOA.com. So the first 10 that get that, I'll make sure, in addition to you, ma'am, if you want to come down. It's a really good film. I've actually seen it. It's gotten lots of awards. He's actually been trying to get Netflix or Amazon to pick it up.
To pick it up. Now it's narrated by Michael Chiklis, who was the commish, right?
He was the commish. Right. He was also on The Shield.
The Shield, yeah. Vic Mackey on The Shield.
That's correct.
Now, let's do that email address again. You said RSVP at LAAPOA.com.
Correct.
And you know what? And thank you for the French lesson. I never knew that RSVP stood for Response S'il Vous Plaît. I didn't know that. So you're a cultured man, and you've educated me, and I appreciate that. Wow. RSVP. Thank you.
Okay.
So the first 10 people to send you an email and with name and information, then Marshall McLean will make sure that you get tickets to watch this. This is what, Sunday? This Sunday night, the 10th.
This Sunday evening, it's on the eve of 9/11.
So it helps if you're in Los Angeles or the Los Angeles area.
Correct.
Quite naturally. So, yes, go ahead and fire off an email, and he will get you squared away.
Yeah. Film was put together, director Thomas Marchese. He's a former cop himself.
I was going to ask you about that, how that came about.
Yeah, he was a sergeant, Soledad PD up in Northern California.
Northern California, sure. There's a penitentiary up there.
Yeah, and the crazy, weird part about it is while he's making the film, and he was still an active police officer at the time, he became part of his own story.
What happened?
And violence against him, and it's documented in the film. He had to actually retire because of his injuries.
What?
So the thing, and what I'm hearing from the team that's actually pushing this movie out, and they've been taking it around the country. It's actually showing, I think, Saturday evening in New York, with Port Authority Police is actually hosting it there.
Nice.
They have the poor distinction of being the police department that lost the most officers in one day.
Right. At 9/11.
Yeah, most people think it's NYPD, but it's actually Port Authority. They lost 37 officers in one shot.
Yeah.
So awful. They're doing it there as well. But like I said, I've seen the film. It's not preachy. It's not political. It just really shows some things that most people don't want to talk about or don't know. Like they mentioned in the trailer that every 53 hours a police officer is killed in the line of duty, and that number, unfortunately, is going down because the attacks on police officers have gone up.
Right. So the length of time, number of hours has gone down. And you know, most the leading cause of death for many years was auto accidents for police officers.
It was.
In fact, earlier this year, I lost a business associate who was also a police officer who was killed in a vehicle pursuit. He was leaving to join a pursuit and ran into the back of a Curtis Bartlett from out of Virginia, the deputy sheriff in Virginia. And Curtis was killed in a traffic collision. And that was the leading cause. And now that's no longer the leading cause for police officers. It's a murder or gunfire, right? And actual attacks on police officers. So that's incredible, man. And that the job is not, we call it a thankless job. I think it's we need a stronger word than that.
Yeah.
Now,
yeah, I don't know what that word would be, but I was going to circle back to something that was said earlier, because communication is key, and unfortunately he's been running into you know, Netflix and Amazon are really digging in more with films that are more anti-police.
Sure.
Even shows that perpetuate, you know, like even The Shield, you know, you had a bad cop.
Right.
You know, you have a lot of shows coming out right now that are more about bad police officers that are just perpetuating that same, and I won't say stereotype, because there are bad police officers. There are bad people in the world. They happen to pick this profession just as they pick other professions as well. And so that's where the dialogue does need to happen, and this is the type of film that really brings it back to, like the gentleman said at the end of the film, you know, I'm a person. There's a heart that's behind the badge, and people get lost and all of that, and try to make it us versus them on both sides of the argument. Try to make it us versus them, and it really needs to get back to what it's really about, and making people safe and feel safe and protecting people.
You know what's interesting is you said that you know, the stereotype or the image of a bad police officer is out there.
And
here's the absolute truth. One of the most famous police officers, or former police officers, in this country right now, is a guy that I talk to on a fairly regular basis named Michael Dowd. And Mikey was the subject of the Showtime special, The 7-5, which talked about the corruption at the NYPD precinct, the 75th precinct, back in the late 80s, early 90s. And, you know, Mike has the distinction of being called the most corrupt cop in NYPD history. Which is like being called the tallest player in NBA history, as far as I'm concerned. But Mike is a celebrity, okay? He's a celebrity, and you know, beside the fact he's just a charismatic dude, and he is, I'm not gonna take anything from him. He's charismatic as hell. But that mystique and that notoriety, you know, that being notorious is something that people really have bought into. And they're actually, he told me they're making a movie about him, and it's going to be a big movie. And I think he said Donnie Wahlberg is going to play him in the movie.
Hmm. Okay.
So it's going to be, it's probably going to be a long, if they do it right, it's going to be like Donnie Brasco, but he's actually is corrupt, you know?
Got it.
So, but that's one of the things, you're right, it sells. And I could see in this political climate with there being a problem with Netflix or Amazon being hesitant to pick it up. But they got to know there are those of us who will watch that and who will pay for it. And, you know, hopefully with these screenings across the country, we'll he'll get some traction and be able to show that.
Right. I mean, just to get back to the fact that when we're talking about bad or corrupt police officers, that is not the norm. That
not at not, all.
You know, when you see new shows that come out, like what's the show that J-Lo's on? Something blue. Where I mean, you got the lieutenant's bad, the sergeant's bad, IA is bad. I mean, everybody in the whole department.
Well, listen.
It's bad and corrupt.
Listen, Denzel Washington played more than one police officer in his career, but who did he get the Oscar for playing? He got the Oscar for playing Lonzo Harris, right? The bad cop in Training Day.
That's true.
Boy, and the LAPD caught a lot of stuff from that.
Oh yeah, yeah. Even the filming of it.
Yeah, the African American officers. Yeah.
And I mean, I can speak on behalf of being a union president, and it's one of those situations where people forget or don't realize that we don't want to work with bad cops.
Who does? That's the thing, right? Nobody. We don't think that's.
We're not trying to protect them.
Right.
We don't want to protect them. We want them out of the profession. I still remember, George, back when we worked together, one of the individual police officers from LAPD who actually had a limousine company on the side, and he heard that Rafael Perez was driving a limo out at the airport.
Yes.
He said, you know, if you see him, let me know because I want to punch him in the mouth.
That's right. That's for right. Yeah. Reasons. Yeah. And that officer was a big guy. And and Rafael Perez didn't want to catch those hands from that officer, believe me. But no, you're right. I mean, these, and again, for the same reason, Mike Dowd is an outcast amongst, I talk to people, I have two friends that work for NYPD. One's recently retired, but one is, she's a current officer. And they're not feeling him. He's not a hero to them at all. You know what I mean?
Yeah, you know what? They stain all the good officers just trying
Absolutely.
To do their job, and that's the truth of it. And the bad part is that your silence allows that shame to go unchecked.
Well, that's the thing, really, is that people say that that good cops need to do a better job of reporting bad cops. But what people don't realize is most internal affairs complaints that are sustained for officer misconduct are actually generated from within. Somebody says, hey, this person I think is doing that, and they start looking at him until they end up catching him. Or, a supervisor sees something, then it gets generated. So, and maybe it's because those have more credibility because they're coming from within.
From within.
Right. You know?
Well, who's going to fix it if my testimony won't cause any ripple in the water?
Right. If you say something versus me as a police officer, police sergeant says something, it is going to carry. Well, we need to do more of that. But nobody wants to work with a dirtbag.
No. Well.
Right. And also put it in perspective, when you're talking about NYPD, you're talking, over 35,000 police officers?
50,000 now. They got 50,000 people on the job out there. Are you kidding me? 50,000 cops on that department. That's incredible.
Oh,
50,000 cops in that town. That's incredible.
LAPD is 10,000.
Think about that. LAPD's got 10,000. NYPD's got 50,000.
Right. So when you're talking about, you may not let alone know what precinct or even the person's name, let alone know, how did these other cops not know that it was going on?
Right, sure.
Yeah, maybe on his individual watch, or maybe some individuals may know this or that, but to say that there's this big cover-up going on, that's not happening.
Well, let's just cut through the chase and talk about this. Besides the fact that we're all sworn an oath and we're supposed to uphold the law, there are people who are just like any other job. You got people who want to get ahead, and they know that they can get ahead if they turn this officer in or they make this case or whatever. We've seen people with career aspirations do that. Hell, I've seen them go after people who really didn't even do anything wrong, let alone if they know that you're doing something. So it's not a safe place to be a criminal in the police department for obvious reasons. It's just sometimes those guys, they like Mike Dowd, they are charismatic, and people like them and people want to be liked by them, so maybe they turn a blind eye to a little brutality here and there. But nobody's going to tolerate knowing that you're selling dope. Nobody's going to tolerate knowing that you're stealing money. It's just not something that's going to be tolerated. And that's a misconception. But we still do need to police ourselves better, because Mike Dowd didn't start off selling kilos of cocaine. Okay, it was Rafael Perez didn't start off shooting people and planting dope on him. It was little stuff.
Little stuff. Yeah.
It went unchecked until they got to that point.
And,
we can talk on another call about some of the things you and I have discussed offline about how the police academies have gotten softer than where they were.
Not weeding people out like you would like. Yeah.
Can I ask a question?
Yes, ma'am.
Do you really think Raphael was just a fluke, that he just started this on his own? Was there some thing set in place that he kind of joined in the conduct?
Well, here's what they said.
Was he a lone wolf?
He was hired during a phase when LAPD relaxed their hiring standards to get a lot of people in. He also hooked up with an officer named David Mack, who I knew David Mack when he was out in the street. And David, though, had been a gang member, and they didn't catch it. Okay, and when David was caught, it turns out he had been a blood. He was a Piru out of Compton, grew up with Suge Knight. But his whole thing is he ran track. He was an athlete, ran track. Oregon State had a scholarship. So they didn't really look any farther beyond that. But the word is that when David got caught for bank robbery, he robbed that Bank of America over USC, off Jefferson over there, Jefferson and McClintock, that Bank of America over there, that when he got arrested for bank robbery, he completely divested himself of all police affiliation and said, I've always been a blood. This is blood. Okay? The LAPD thing, that was cool, but this is blood right here. Mm-hmm. And then there's picture surfaces of him at Death Row with Suge Knight and all these other cats out in Las Vegas and that whole scandal. So I think that you had some people get through the process, slip through the cracks at a time when there were more cracks than normal in that selection process. They met up with each other and they, you know, like you get two bad actors together in any environment, whether it's a school, a hospital, or a church, you get two bad actors together, you're gonna have problems. And then those guys went above and beyond and did some pretty things that shook up the LAPD and shook up the city. That Rampart scandal has repercussions that last to this day.
Yes. It's, you know, still hard feelings about it.
Oh yeah, I'm sure.
And Raphael's out of prison now.
No, he's driving limos at LAX. Oops, did I say? Well, Marshall said it earlier. So, yeah. There's been a couple of Rafael Perez sightings at LAX. You can look that up on YouTube.
No, I don't want to.
And yeah. Stacey Coon, too.
Oh, is Stacey Coon out?
Stacey Coon was. I don't know if he was doing it now, but they both were driving levels for a while.
Oh, really? Well, Stacey Coon, for those of you who don't remember, Stacey Coon was a sergeant in the Rodney King beating. He was the one that Jim Carrey famously played him as a character on Living Color. Stacey Coon, he went down for failure to supervise and basically allowing that to go down. So, you know, he ended up going to federal prison. Mm-hmm. Notably, he was in a halfway house when he got out, and there was a guy, it was a halfway house out in Riverside, and he went to go visit his family. I think it was Father's Day or Easter or something, so he wasn't at the halfway house. On the very day that a guy showed up with a gun who heard he was at the halfway house and showed up to kill him. Now imagine that. Stacey Coon, if the guy found out, hey, that cop from Rodney King is in this halfway house, shows up there to kill him, goes in there looking for Stacey Coon. They said he's not here, turns into a hostage situation. Riverside County Sheriff's SWAT team shows up. The point man was one of my old SWAT school instructors, and they made entry and killed the dude. So he goes there to kill Stacey Coon and gets smoked himself. But that was the last I ever heard of Stacey Coon. I guess he decided to lay low after that, but I didn't know that he was driving limos out at Los Angeles International Airport. And they want to talk bad about Uber drivers. bad about who's driving for Uber.
this was prior to the advent of Uber, okay?
Yes.
Oh, okay, so it was years ago, okay. And maybe he's driving for Uber now.
I hope not.
Always a pleasure. Like I said, happy early birthday.
Yeah, man. Well, I'm gonna see you Sunday. So yeah, we'll have to have a. They sell alcohol at that place.
they do. They have dinner as well. So we'll talk about that.
Outstanding. All right. That was Marshall McClain, president of the Los Angeles Airport Peace Officers Association. And again, send them that email at rsvp@laapoa.com. And RSVP stands for what? Responsible Play. Nice. Yes. All right. So, thanks, Marshall. So, Sister Heron, I do appreciate you coming in, sitting in with me tonight, riding along.
Well, it's been an interesting look from the other side of the table at your side, really.
I know, right? Because last time I think I was sitting there or here, and you were sitting here or something. But it's nice to talk about it.
You were sitting in the middle.
Oh, you over there? Okay.
It was the day Prince died.
Oh, that's right, because we, Poetess and I walked across the street afterwards to go to the Leimert Park celebration on Prince's life. That's right.
Yes.
Wow, you got a great memory. That was a terrible day, man.
It was a terrible day. That's why I won't forget it. And I won't forget that you came and sat with us and we tried to make sense of things that don't make sense.
Right, right. You know, but, you know, we. But hey, we'll do that again. So it's an enjoyable thing.
Yeah.
So listen, folks. We're going to wrap up this week's edition of Ride Along Radio Show. But if you want to make a show, a suggestion of a topic or whatever, you can send us an email to ridealongradioshow@gmail.com. If you've got comments, you can leave them down below in the YouTube comment section right here on the YouTube page. Or you can send us a tweet at Ride Along Radio. Or you can hit us up on Instagram at Ride Along Radio Show. Also, our Facebook page is pretty active, too. So we have a Facebook page, which is Ride Along Radio Show. On Facebook, and we get a lot of activity there too, and we'll post videos and we'll get commentary from that, and we do a lot of engagement there. So again, Sister Heron, thanks for joining us,
inviting me.
And until then, I am George Holt, and I will see you guys all next week right back here at morrismedialive.com. Thanks for joining us, and be safe.